Beautiful human, beautiful alien bay, beautiful unicorn, dolphin, mystical creature. I'm glad you're here. Welcome to Co-Create. I'm your host, Dr. Caroline Addington, and this podcast is a beautiful space for beautiful humans who are building beautiful things in the world in new and different ways. And today, we're talking with the absolute wizard, Celesta McIntyre Etheridge, about unraveling the myths and the trauma that our society carries around productivity, work, and rest. And it is a gorgeous conversation, a really gorgeous conversation. I'm going to give you a little sneak peek here in a second on what we talk about in this episode, and then I'll give you some more background on who this magical Celesta human is, and then we'll dive into it. So, what have you pressed play on? Great question. So, we're talk first about some of the childhood patterning, growing up in a world that is, you know, if you're tuning in from like a modernized industrialized society, growing up in a world of capitalism and, you know, this intersection between the world around us, productivity and trauma. We talk about some of the childhood patterning that can tend to restrict our lives in this way. And we talk about tuning into our bodies to understand our true capacity, which is one of my favorite parts of this conversation. And Celesta does such an incredible job modeling this for us, you know, what it means to truly honor our unique capacity in who we be and what we have room for and what we get excited about doing and not doing, what we get excited about doing and what we get excited about being each day, and then not treating ourselves like robots, you know, that we can do, but really honoring our humanity. We talk about the importance of modeling to one another that it is, in fact, safe to honor our needs, you know, especially if you're in a position of leadership, whether you're leading a family or, you know, a team, whether that's in your business or, you know, in the corporate world, or whether you're leading an online community. Modeling rest is an act of not just self-care, but community care. And we talk about that for a good bit too. And then towards the end, we talk about holding the beauty and the mess of the world at the very same time. And we talk about resourcing ourselves in these small, simple, beautiful, very human moments. So it is a gorgeous conversation. I think you're gonna love it. And I hope you take so much away from it. And who is the Celesta human that I keep referencing? I can tell you, having been the interviewer, that Celesta's energy is just, okay, Celesta does such an incredible job embodying like all of many things at once. I won't say all of the things at once because no one can be all of the things at once, but they do an incredible job of modeling what it means to be multi-layered and multidimensional, you know? And I don't mean multidimensional where like part of you is like off in the ninth dimension and part of you is here in 3D. I mean like layered, right? That we can have these periods of work and movement and momentum, and we can have these periods of rest and relaxation, and that all of it gets to be us, all of it gets to be a part of who we are. Celesta does an amazing job of modeling that in how they live and breathe and have their being, which is amazing. But on a 3D tangible level, who is Solasta? I'm going to give you the very 3D answer to who Solasta is and like what they do, quote unquote do. But then I'm actually going to read you their whole bio as they submitted it for like, you know, being a podcast guest, because it's straight poetry. So the very 3D answer is that they're a registered associate marriage and family therapist in California, specializing in somatics, trauma, attachment, busy minds, and perfectionism. And they work with individuals to provide consultation and do speaking engagements through their private practice, Accessible Therapy. The private practice is called Accessible Therapy. So that is the incredibly 3D answer. But when... like when guests are going to come and be on the podcast, I'm like, send me a bio and we'll like, you know, so we can introduce you and put it on the episode webpage and everything. And oftentimes if guests submit a bio that is in the first person where it's like, I do this and I do that, it, when we, you know, when it goes live on the episode webpage, it gets rewritten as like, so-and-so does this and so-and-so does that. But when I read Solasta's, I was like, this is poetry and I don't want to change it. So I'm going to read it to you as is in first person, but know that it, I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking like this is Solasta speaking through my mouth to you right now. So here goes. I'm a cosmic rainbow. I have many names and am many things. I am a Barutaga. I hope I said that right. A dreamer and visionary in Scots Gaelic, my ancestral tongue. I am Pisces Sun, Aquarius Moon, and North Node, and Capricorn Rising and Stellium. These energies tie me to where land meets sea. I am a queer, trans, non-binary, gender non-conforming, poly, autistic, racialized, white, seventh generation settler with mixed European ethnicity living between the Bay and New York on Turtle Island. I am a lifelong artist, director, producer, triple threat performer, writer, and community organizer who puts all these pieces together in my studio, Full and Plenty Joy, whose vision is to change the way stories are told so we can manifest a new world. I believe the more people share their stories, the closer we'll be to liberation. So you can see why I could not tamper with that bio. It is poetry and it is beautiful, and it really felt like it wanted to be read verbatim. So that is who we're talking to today, Solasta McIntyre Etheridge, and I hope you enjoy it so, so, so much. If you are really picking up what we're laying down and you'd like to get in touch with Solasta, you'd like to learn more about what they're up to, all the links are in the show notes. But I'll say go to fullandplentyjoy.com. That's their website. You can also find them at Solasta McIntyre Etheridge on Instagram, and there are underscores in between each part of their name. And then they also have a weekly like Telegram hangout space on Telegram. So outside of like, you know, some of the other traditional social media spaces. So if you'd like to sign up for that or sign up for freebies and goodies, all those links are in the show note at the episode website. So definitely check them out, as well as their psychotherapy listing. If you're interested in going down the rabbit hole and, you know, getting support in psychotherapy and consulting and all of these things. So yeah, it's a gorgeous episode. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous conversation. And I hope you enjoy it so much. Before we dive in, I'll say two more things. Number one, if you are digging it, feel free to share it, send it to someone that you're like, oh my God, they would benefit from this so much. I told my partner, Jake, I was like, listen to this episode, because he has five, y'all, he has five planets in Capricorn. So the Joker loves to like go and push and pretend he's a robot. So I was like, baby, when this episode drops, you have to listen to it. I mean, he doesn't have to, he's a grown human, but best believe I'm sending it to him. So if there's anyone in your life that you think would really benefit from some of the perspective shifts that are offered in this episode, feel free to send it to him. Feel free to head to iTunes, subscribe, and write a review. It always helps the podcast out so much, and I'm always infinitely grateful whenever you do. And last little tidbit is that there's a free five-part mini course that I put together for you guys a hot minute ago called Legit Freedom that is all about helping you release consumerism, rethink your relationship with money and the world around you, and embrace a new way of relating to money, embrace a very sacred and honoring way of relating to money. So if that's something that you want to jam out on for free 99, you can do that. Just go to carolineaddington.com/free course and it's right there. I'll also put the link in the show notes. If you just want to bebop over there, you can find it there too. There's so many treasures in the show notes. So with all of that, we will dive on in like a dolphin into the depths of this conversation, which will make sense soon. The dolphin reference will make sense soon. Just keep listening. It'll make sense. And I love you so much. I hope you enjoy the heck out of this episode. Welcome, Solasta, fabulous human. I'm super excited. I've been super excited for this conversation because it's, I feel like it just touches so many aspects of our lives in the, you know, time and place and world in which we live. So yes. Thank you for your time, your energy, your wisdom, your juju that you're bringing to this space. And I'm really excited.
Thank you. I'm very grateful and excited to be here. It's a very complex and important topic. So yeah, I appreciate you bringing it in.
Yeah, literally my pleasure. My first favorite question to ask everybody is always, what is you, if you had to, and this is like maybe an incredibly difficult question, but boil down your essence and your magic that you bring into the world, what would that be?
Oh, I really resonate with the dolphin as like part of my essence energy, kind of like a bardic dolphin from the Highlands is my like essence energy, with a little bit of like leprechaun shamrock magic rainbow sprinkled in, more like I'm a dolphin diving through the rainbow. And I love dolphins because I feel like they can play and be light, and you know, they're social and like to be in their pods, but they also communicate like through sound and not always through talking, and but they can dive deep. And so that's kind of my magic essence. Is I think a lot of people, when they first meet me, they think, oh, this person's really like funny and like, you know, they shine. So Solasta means luminous and shimmering in Scots Gaelic.
Cool. I didn't know that.
Yes, it's such a beautiful word. But then it's like, also, we're going to dive into the depths of like psychology and the unconscious. So it's kind of like a incognito vibe, but with a dolphin magic.
I love that so much. That may go down as one of the best answers given so far on the podcast.
Excellent. That makes me very happy.
Yeah. I so resonate with the like the lightheartedness, but also the diving deep. I think that it's like, as a human, it makes some of those deeper concepts digestible, and it makes it like humor and lightheartedness and just kind of like a, like an Alan Watts Joker approach to life, you know, can make things a little bit more digestible.
Yes, absolutely. I use humor a lot with clients because it's like, you can't just dive right into the traumatic material. You really need to, you know, acclimate to the waters and then see like, oh, and then yeah, because otherwise we'd just get overwhelmed all over again. So some people like that, some people don't. So I gotta be able to laugh. It's a discharge, you know, it's like some good chemicals in the body.
Yeah. Well, and that's such a cool perspective too. I'd never thought of it that way, but it's you're literally introducing some feel-good chemicals in the thick of something that would otherwise maybe the body would have a very different chemical cocktail going on, you know? And so in that way, probably very, you know, having a very almost like rewiring effect on how the body experiences that thing.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Exactly.
Never thought of that.
Yeah, I mean, like with the productivity piece, like the gesture is like me like clenching my fist together, you know, in like a very quote unquote professional work environment, or like growing up through the school system where you have to be like, make eye contact and sit still and no laughing. Or like, I grew up doing a lot of dancing, and sometimes dance class is very like, you need to pay attention and like, don't talk, we're rehearsing. And it's like, that's very difficult, I think, for most humans, but especially for like rainbow brain humans, because you just got to regulate yourself more. And like, I think the blood, like, yeah, the laughter and lightness really can help. I don't always think it's like a distraction.
Yeah. 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 That's so true. I grew up dancing too. And I deeply appreciate your Instagram ballet. I haven't had a chance to tell you yet. I love your Instagram ballet.
Thank you.
Because I think that you do such a, to speak into like, you know, the dolphins and communicating without sound, like you communicate so much through the way that you can feel that you're moving the dance and the ballet through your body, you know, is like it, you give yourself these like body laughter interruptions in your ballet, you know? And I appreciate that so much, because I lived through a super similar thing in like dance class as a kid, where it's like, it's, and here you are doing something that is like so human and so expressive and so like freeing, but it's trying to be constrained. It's weird. It's like, why? We're not supposed to constrain life like this.
Yes. Yes. I feel that.
Yeah. Yeah. So the trauma of productivity and of doing, feel free to like dive down the rabbit hole for someone who maybe, I'm sure most people who decided to click play on this podcast have some felt sense of what we're talking about. But for someone who is maybe like, I've never heard about it that way or thought about it that way, how would you speak into all of that big, I know that's a big rat's nest to start to
unpack. Let's go. Dive in. I mean, the first kind of like, the first overarching rainbow arc of it is just like the capitalism aspect, like just like the reality of what is, of like the times that we live in and have been living in, you know, for, you know, generations at this point. And those conditions kind of normalizing this very high expectation, very high bar for output. And maybe that output is, you know, every minute of your workday, of your 8-hour workday, you're on your laptop doing something, or you're in a meeting like back to back, or like, you know, some therapist or client-based work, seeing clients like back to back to back to back. And like, you got to get those hours, you got to get, you know, make the money, like off. It's like, it's just such a pervasive, such a challenging environment to exist within. But for every single human, because, you know, of course, I come at this conversation as someone who, you know, late in my life, like literally this past year, got diagnosed with autism and ADHD. And that was kind of like a big wake up moment for me, of kind of almost like a not pulling back the veil of this trauma of productivity. That veil pulling back was much more like, you know, pandemic starting like 2020. I think that happened for a lot of people. Totally. Really starting to recognize, holy guacamole, this is so much better to work from home. Or this is like, and of course, you know, that wasn't true for everyone. Some people, they really need that structure to go in person and show up to work. And regardless of which camp you're in, which I don't think it has to be a binary, whatever, you know, it's nice to be with people. We are social creatures. But I think regardless, because this structure has been happening for so long and it is inherently exploitative.
Yeah.
Like, it is inherently seeing us humans, these rainbow, these sensitive, these complex, these deeply feeling, expressive, like, souls in these little tiny bodies that are gonna decay and die. Like, that is our life path. Spoiler alert. Like, it's normal. You know, it's not fun. But anyways, like, regardless of, I just think it's important in general for everyone to reflect on the ways in which their day-to-day routine, the work that they're doing, the labor that they're providing, is it actually working for you? You know, and of course not everyone has as much choice in making shifts around day-to-day routines, or some people based on their other trauma cocktail, you know, outside of productivity, might really struggle with one, recognizing when they're maybe overdoing it or pushing too much, might have trouble with advocating for themselves. And there's so many power dynamics, particularly when it comes to more corporate, or like if you're working underneath someone or any kind of that setup, or someone just really might be, yeah, like no boundaries and like feel like they have to give a lot. Or, you know, I grew up with like a Christian upbringing, and I definitely got the message throughout that time that like you're meant to serve. And I think service is important. However, it can get out of balance really fucking fast. And then as a white person, it can really morph very quickly into some serious shadow shit of like, oh, I have to save people, or this like martyrdom. So there's so much when it comes to mental health challenges and expressions, behaviors, thoughts, feelings, et cetera, that are really locked in and kind of, yeah, what is this gesture I'm doing? Just like tied up in knots,
yeah,
sort of, with this overarching culture, which is capitalism. You are a machine. You don't have feelings. You need to have X amount of output, and your worth is based on it. And if you can't do it, you suck. You're not worthy, and we're going to discard you to the margins of society, and we're not going to take care of you. And that, so it's big.
It's so big. And like, it's fucking exhausting. Like, just yes, to honor that like, I'll speak from my personal experiences, even at like with each layer that I peel back and I'm like, okay, all right, we see how we're getting caught up in this again. We're going to release that. We're going to, okay. All right. Okay. And like, still to live, just to live in a world that operates that way it's energetically taxing. And I think that part of this too feels like the fact that because that isn't quite normalized yet and isn't talked about widely, that then at least I know I will then get down on myself for being tired and being exhausted when it's like, no, like, yeah, be like, let you get to be tired. You get to be exhausted. Like, it's exhausting to live in this world.
It really is.
Yeah.
Like, the word lazy comes up a lot, because I work with a lot of overachievers, perfectionists, workaholics. Hello, takes one to know one. Like, well, yeah. So I feel like especially for like generators and manifesting generators, we're just like, yo, we're just gonna do it all.
Well, and then there's like the messaging in human design that it's like, yeah, you can do it all. And so then we're like, okay, must do it all. and yes. Like, yeah. Woo.
Yeah, it's like, no, don't need to do it all. And my very first therapist, because I started doing therapy after going through treatment for eating disorder, and a lot of disordered eating and body shame related issues are like the roots of that. It's not always I mean, it usually there's like, you know, definitely some solid threads of like the fat phobia and like the beauty and attraction and patriarchy and all that stuff. But it's also a lot of like perfectionism and like control and, you know, proving your worth in some kind of way. So that therapist who I met through that experience, she was the one that taught me like, because I would use lazy all of the time to describe myself, you know, to describe others, you know, very more judgmental. And she was like, laziness like is not a thing, like literally it's made up. And I was just like, what do you mean?
Yeah, go down that rabbit hole. Go down that. I want to hear.
Yeah. Well, she was, she kind of expressed it in these two ways of like, okay, laziness is actually either one, you're fucking exhausted. Like, or you're just tired because you are not a robot. Because even though there's so much of that language present in society as well, as like, oh, I gotta fuel my body. Like your body is like a car. Your body's not a car. It's a very fleshy, delicate system. That's, you know, it's kind of weird. Like your body's kind of weird. I don't know. Anyways, so it's just. Side note, we're really just aliens, as you know.
You would advocate for that statement.
Yes. So she was like, oh, it's really more you probably need to rest. Like you're actually tired and we need to rest. Like you can't just do. It's literally impossible. You're just going to keep building in those cycles of burnout, which a lot of people get caught in. But also, again, that's not really their fault, because that's how structurally everything is set up, with schools, such a burnout schedule, with the work week, such a burnout schedule. And then America's particular approach to school and work, extremely burnout schedule, no vacation. So she's like, oh, you're just tired. Like, go take a nap, like go watch some TV, chill the fuck out. I was like, okay. And then the second option is more like, there's some resistance to doing something. And at that time, I didn't have any concept of my neurodivergence. So I think for folks, it's either like maybe feeling overwhelmed about a task that you have to do, or maybe, you know, you actually don't want to be doing all these things that you're fucking committed to. And so there's like this unconscious resistance or ambivalence, you know, towards doing it. And then you feel bad about, oh, I'm so lazy, I don't work hard enough, I don't do it. It's like, no, it's just what you're trying to do is actually not what your ancestors and spirit want you to do. Like you have another path, and like maybe like pause and rest so you can hear them and feel them and receive them, so you can move in a way that's a little bit more like easeful. So when she told me those two, it's really those two options. Like either you're just like overwhelmed and resistance, you know, especially for folks with like ADHD, brain diversity, et cetera, et cetera. Like, fuck, completing a task? That's a lot. That's a lot sometimes. Getting out of bed, oh my God, that can be a lot to ask.
Yeah. I'm so grateful that that sentence came out your mouth, because I think that especially in the world of like business building and all this stuff, like that trauma of productivity, that trauma of doing is so alive in the world of business. And it's like every day you gotta get up and be excited about what you're doing and have a morning routine and like all this stuff. And it can, you know, seep in there. And then say you, at least I know for myself, say when I wake up and I'm like, I really want to lay around and like, and just like slug for a minute, because I need to slug for a minute. And I don't feel great about getting up today. And that's okay. You know, that little, like, you know, not to put all this on one human, but it's like a Tony Robbins voice way back in the back of the the head. It's not all on one human, but it's got those characteristics and this quality way back in the back of the head, you know, being like, get up, make it your best day ever. And I'm like, hush, go to bed.
You up right now.
Yeah. Who gave you coffee?
Hey, yeah, maybe take a break. Yeah. Let's get you on some, whatever. Yeah. With like the nervous system stuff as well, like, it took me many, many years, like literally almost 10 years to get an actual felt sense and also like intellectual understanding of what my capacity actually is. Like, and so I think, you know, for myself, sometimes on days where that, you know, that voice or whatever is like, you know, you need to have this figured out, like you're the right routine or the right time to go to bed or wake up or do this or like maximize your productivity, like that, like
I love your bro voice. Yeah, that's so good.
It's my bro voice for sure. We're gonna maximize. Oh my god, it's so easy to get slipped into that, I guess. Just side note, you know, because it does. And that's why I feel sometimes this unethical element to a lot of those offerings in the world, because it does take advantage of those parts of people that are really desperate for money, which, because hello, shit's fucking expensive. Like, late stage capitalism is not going well. Yeah. It is not going well. So like, that's really real. And then also the self-esteem parts and whatever, but like, yeah, the getting to know my nervous system was kind of both through like somatics and also, I mean, it was more like step one recovery, like actually getting in my body, because that's another way in which a lot of people can keep themselves in a burnout cycle is by not being in tune with their hunger and fullness cues, by pushing past them or overbooking them, quote unquote, overbooking themselves, and then be like, oh, I didn't have time to eat, or oh, I didn't have time, I forgot to bring a snack, or, you know, things like that. And, you know, what you learn in recovery is like, bro, like, you gotta investigate that. Like, why does that keep happening? Is that, are there also some tendrils, you know, of the, you know, self-esteem and the body image stuff and just like all of that very deeply, deeply entrenched beliefs about our bodies and et cetera. So that kind of helped with starting to be like, oh, I have a body. Look at this. And like, I can't, even productivity in terms of like exercise and like fitness and things like that. And again, it's still that doing. It's always like this doing. And I would love to live in a world where people can do more being, just like do more being. And if there's a genuine like impulse that arises from within the body, that's like, man, I really want to like move today outside, like with the air and the sunshine. Fuck yes. I want to feel the tendons in my body. I want to feel my lungs breathing. Like, I'm going to go do some movement. Go live your fucking life, yeah. You know? But this like, oh, I have this more like, again, it's this like strict, rigid, like teacher thing. And not to say again, like some people, especially like autistic people, for example, like routine and having that rigid routine is really help, like a structure is really buoying and really helpful. But when it's packaged in this like, in order to be healthy or in order to be productive or in order to be a leader, you need to like do this shit and go pump some iron. Like, it's just like, no, actually, like you're just keeping yourself in this kind of like dopamine hit cycle. And it actually becomes quite addictive. And as someone whose, you know, disordered eating, body image stuff was much more expressed in like a over-exercise bulimia kind of way and orthorexia, like, oh, health and what am I putting in my body and all that kind of way. It, yeah, that was, I feel like, a foundational piece for this larger growth and knowing of what is my actual capacity. But I think that piece is really taboo and really scary for a lot of people, because you have to look at some stuff that's like, yeah, it's really shadowy.
That's such a cool connection to bring in, because you know, when I think about like productivity and doing, I don't necessarily like, that wouldn't have been the first connection that came to mind, but it's so true and it's so common. And I think of myself and like, you know, I'm having flashbacks to like grad school when I was like hardcore workaholic, and I would just quote unquote fuel myself with coffee and caffeine and then stop for like 5 minutes in the middle of the day to drink some water and eat like crackers and a Clif Bar. And that was my lunch, and just keep going, you know? So that total disregard for the, like, because if you think about it, you kind of have to disregard your body in order to keep doing when your body is saying, please stop, please stop, please stop. This isn't what we want. You kind of have to shut it down in order to keep going. Otherwise, if you were to hear and listen, then the cycle would cease.
Exactly. And that's why it really is like, you know, there was a time, even like pretty recently, like I would say, but like the first year of pandemic.
A phrase you never thought you'd say.
Right? The first year of pandemic. It was so funny. I actually just saw, I was like looking at some, like reconnecting with a friend and like the DMs, and looked at like our older message, and it was during like April of 2020. And they're like, oh yeah, like I'm sure things will work out once this like quarantine situation is over. Oh my God. Hilarious. Wow. Sorry. That tangent really brought me somewhere.
I'm sure it brought everyone somewhere.
Oh yes. But it's just like, you know, I've had to, in my own personal process, because this is also kind of like a brain diversity thing of sometimes righteousness coming in, and which is, you know, sometimes useful, but a lot of the times it's anger that's being expressed and it needs a place to go, but it also has an inherent kind of like judgmental quality to it, and a kind of like, oh, I know and you don't, which is also this power like differential. And I think it had to like do a lot of learning around like, you know, this really isn't anyone's fault. You know, because it is difficult sometimes to witness people you love or people in your network in relationship with productivity or in relationship with exercise or in relationship, like, you know, with certain kinds of politics or like whatever the fuck. And you see some like shadow there, but it's not your path. You know, you have your path, but it's really these structures and these institutions and these cultural expectations that are harming people. It's not the people's fault. However, it's our opportunity to be brave and be vulnerable and supportive of one another in this kind of figuring it the fuck out, because it's complicated. And like, so that we can support each other collectively to shift things, because at the end of the day, it's really the school's fault that it sets up grad school with these insane project deadlines and tests and homework and so much reading that I will never finish. Just well, like,
and it goes beyond, and this is the, so like, let's go in this direction, because it can keep moving up the ladder, right? Because why are the labs set up with that insane demand? Well, because they're fighting for grant money, and why is the grant money so scarce, and da 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 da. And you know, so it like, it's just like this big cloud that can keep going. And you know, I guess we can dive into like how it's interwoven into all these big systems and structures and putting it in the context of everything. But even before we do that, maybe taking a second for everybody, because it can be a lot, you know, when you're like, ah, and then you feel like it's like David and Goliath kind of energy, like you're this tiny little standing against this giant. So like to everyone who is maybe feeling any of that, any like words of wisdom, guidance, thoughts that you would share, and then we can maybe dive into putting this in the context of all of these larger structures.
Yes, two tarot cards are like the images were coming to my mind. One was the Wheel of Fortune. And my tarot teacher is Lindsay Mack. She does tarot for the wild soul. And I just really love her approach because it's really all an internal journey, every single card, but it can become externalized, whereas sometimes in tarot, which sometimes scares people away from it, it's like, this is what your destiny is, or like, you know, a little more predictive in that way. But anyway, she teaches the Wheel of Fortune as like inviting you to come back to your center, like to the center of the wheel, and all these, like in the Rider-Waite-Smith imagery, like all these different, so many different symbols all around this center wheel from different astrological signs, which are all the fixed signs, like these structures. So that makes me think, yeah, these structures are kind of fixed, that like those like Goliath energies you're kind of talking about, but then these other magical energies getting close to us, but it really being about coming back to your center and letting the world turn around you, but not in an apathetic way, not in a, I'm going to disengage and never come back to the world and participate and, you know, be a part of the world. 'Cause you know, that's, dissociation is important sometimes, often as a survival mechanism. And also we are all a part of this world and need that. So coming back to the center, I think, is really helpful when it comes to healing the productivity trauma. It's like, and really with any kind of trauma healing, seeing if you can first catch it, and it being whatever the automatic behavior would normally be, like, oh, I just got off a meeting, okay, I'm gonna go right back into it, instead of being like, okay, maybe actually let me close the screen just for a minute, literally 1 minute, let me take some breaths, or let me just shake out a little bit. Kind of seeing it as an like coming back to the center as an invitation to come back to center in the body, and that being an exploration that's different for everybody. So for me, sometimes like after a client session, I have to force myself to like, because my automatic behavior would be like, let me go on Instagram and scroll, or let me like get this note done. It's like, no, I need to go to the sink and like put some water on me, brush off the energy, shake off, come back. Okay, now what do I do? Like, what is the, is it, oh, actually I noticed I'm a little bit hungry. Let me go make some food, put some music on. Oh, actually, yeah, I want to get this note done right now. I feel good about this. My eyes are actually really hurting. Let me rub my hands and like put my hands over my eyes for a little bit and just rest. And then after that, again, checking in, what's the next step? So more step by step by step by step. And I think that kind of process is also very helpful for the overarching healing that comes with the trauma of productivity, of like having such, especially for like, I think especially for millennials, like maybe I'm biased, but just like, you know, really care about changing the world. And like also older generations kind of expecting that of us, but also calling us lazy and entitled at the same time. And I'm just like, bitch, like, no, you can't have it both ways. Like, but I digress. But that like, step by step, instead of feeling you have to take it all on. whether that's with your family, whether that's with your business, whether that's with your art practice, like a home you're renovating, whatever it is, traveling the world, just like taking things more step by step by step. And so coming back to the body, but then the more internal, more like spiritual aspect of that is the trust and the surrender to the turning of the wheel around you. And I would hope, I mean, I know for myself, especially the past years with pandemic, it's been a lot of that learning. Like, how do you both surrender, but in a way where you're not just floating in the void forever and you feel like you can't do anything? Because that doesn't feel good either, right? Like, that's the other end of the spectrum. And that reality can be really scary for people. Like, well, what if I can never get out of, like, that's really, but what if I can never get out of bed? What if I, you know, brain goes to really big what if, worst case scenario situations. So like, because feeling depressed sucks. You know, that really fucking sucks.
So unanimously.
That just sucks. Like, it's not a fun experience. Very difficult to get out of. But so all that to say, it's like the step-by-step coming to the wheel, kind of trusting and starting that, you know, things are probably going to work out. That doesn't mean life is going to be easy. That doesn't mean like capitalism is going to poof, like pop away in a second. Like, but I believe that the more that individual people do that and also support each other, like, and that's more that I'm now, the image is coming to as more the strength card picture of like the angel with the lion, and that like showing vulnerability and care and honesty and transparency with one another, especially for folks who are doing badass work, building their own businesses, creating their own work culture, or maybe they're working in a business and they're that person that's trying to advocate for change. And like, obviously that's a lot of labor to take on, but still really powerful work to be doing. So the more everyone's kind of helping each other out with that, I think that that helps to break down, you know, day by day, month by month, year, decade, lifetime over this Goliath thing. And that's a lot of what abolitionism is like, you know, this world does need to die, but that doesn't mean we can't already be in the new world and make that ourselves. Like we, and that's where the empowerment comes in the choice and the inspiration of like, we can do this together and make those choices and those choices look different for everyone. And then, so not being like overly rigid or judgmental, well, this is how you heal the trauma of productivity, or this is how you do it right, or whatever.
That's more of the same. That's more that it's like, there's only one way to do it. You need to do it right. Here it is. Get in line, do the things.
Yeah. Always a red flag. If you see or hear that anywhere, I know I hear it from my brain all of the time. It's just like, red flag. No.
Yeah.
Wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I so deeply appreciate that perspective of the step-by-step, because, and especially like seeing that modeled and like, and that as an act of care for each other, you know, because I think that it can be, and again, as a byproduct of what we've absorbed from the world, right? Is this feeling of like, oh, I can't be fully human, must be robot, because, you know, what if the people who are, whether it's like on a team, you know, or in the online community or in the client family or whatever, you know, people who are in close communication and close contact with the people who are building things. What if all of a sudden, then now I don't seem like a strong leader to pull out the bro voice. I don't seem like, because that's the template we've been given for strong leader is like, be a robot, always be doing, always have your quote unquote shit together. And I love and deeply appreciate that you're speaking into, or at least this is how I'm interpreting it. Let me know if I'm misinterpreting, is that speaking into that it's truly an act of like community care to be fully human in a quote unquote leadership position or in a position where you're building a thing, because we're modeling to one another, you know, like this is safe. This is safe. This is safe. This is safe. And that's like huge. That's huge.
Oh, yes. Like that is the major medicine of that act, because then it also teaches those parts of ourselves, those trauma survival parts that are afraid, that have been taught their needs don't matter. You don't get to speak up. Even if you did share your needs, no one's going to follow it. Like you're going to be dismissed, or you're going to be gaslit, or you're going to be ridiculed, or like whatever it is. Oh, you can't keep up, like whatever. And it's like, no, 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 no. Actually, like even having that leadership dynamic of the strong leader who never shows is this super, it's like this, feels like this misogynistic, like posturing, and it's like not reality.
Yeah.
And it creates this also inherent, it keeps the power dynamic, it keeps the hierarchy going. And I think a lot of people, particularly in businesses, of course, in like, especially like corporate America, but even in nonprofits, like I worked at like a fucking eating disorder treatment center that's telling me like, oh, we support you in self-care. Oh, like, yeah, take care of yourself too. It's like, bro, I am taking care of myself. I need you to give me a 3-day fucking work week. I cannot do this. But they wouldn't let me. I actually had to leave to get a new fucking job because they wouldn't let me go to part-time. So it's things like that where it's like the whole idea of, not being honest about our capacity and then idealizing an image of what a leader looks like or what a business looks like, where it's this like top-down approach when it really can be non-hierarchical, but that doesn't mean chaos. It doesn't mean disorganization. That doesn't mean like everyone fighting with each other. That doesn't mean you also can't have someone who's directing things and someone who's, you know, writing things. Like it's more of an ecosystem rather than this. Again, back into the bro voice, just like this, like pyramid. Yeah. It's just a totally different energy.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Mm-hmm. I'm just like soaking it all.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Like, yeah. It's so interesting. I'm coming back to the imagery of the Wheel of Fortune. And I would love to hear your thoughts on this, actually, because like, I love having conversations about like the world that we're all bit by bit building together, you know, and like all bringing different pieces of the puzzle and also different perspectives on each piece of the puzzle and like just playing with it and seeing what happens. And so there's a huge chunk of me that's like, yeah. And then there's another chunk of me that's like, whew, it's tiring. Going back to what we were talking about and like, whew, and we live in the world where it is now. And especially, I mean, as we're recording this, like in the thick of like the Russian-Ukraine moment that's happening. And like that also just, you know, is a whole nother energetic piece that needs to be taken into account when we think about our capacity. So like, I'd love to just hear your thoughts on these two parts being simultaneously present. And maybe it goes back to like what you were saying about the Wheel of Fortune, but that like we can have these hopes and these dreams and this action that we're moving towards, you know, a different way of being and doing while also living in the world where we're living.
Yes. One of my favorite therapeutic modalities is parts work. Fisher, and a lot of her work is also inspired by like internal family systems where you have like the firefighter and the, honestly, I'm more into Janina, sorry, so I forget all the terms for IFS, but anyways, she describes it, links the parts up that you're talking about with different parts of our nervous system, meaning our fight part, our flight part, our freeze part, our submit part, and our attach part. And those five survival parts, they all having their different ways of surviving, and they all having their different thoughts and feelings and et cetera. One being like, you know, the fight part, as it relates to, you know, like the Ukrainian Russian, really bad shit that's happening. That's what I call that. Really bad shit that's happening. yeah.
That's a good catch-all term.
Yeah. Catch-all, that fight part being like, okay, we gotta like, we need to fucking protest. We need to like, you know, fight back. And that being an important survival response, like that president was saying in his speech. And then, you know, there, but there might also be that submit part that comes out being, oh, there's no point. Oh, this is just another war. We're just doing it all over again. It's all the same. Nothing's ever gonna change. I'm just gonna, you know, I'm gonna go back to scrolling and like try to forget, which also we sometimes need to do sometimes to titrate like the massiveness, especially when we do have limited abilities to engage in these bigger things. So the parts, getting to know the parts has been very helpful for myself. And I see it with my clients a lot of getting to know who is speaking right now, who is thinking, where does that part, knowing where that part comes from, how it protects you, how it functions is really helpful for being able to tap into that higher self, that authentic self, that true self, that ancestral voice, those spirits who are there to support you, trying to guide you and help you to kind of come from that place to see if, okay, yeah, maybe I, what my fight part really needs right now is to actually cry, is to actually like put this down for a second, go to my altar, light some candles, and pray and cry and then call a friend afterwards, you know? So the survival parts, I think, are really normal. You know, we all have them, just getting to know them. And then she also talks about this other part, which is kind of the going on with regular life part. And that's the part of us where our caretaker part comes out, where like, you know, it happens a lot when there's loss, like whether that's of a home or a person or whatever the loss is. And some folks in their grieving posture, you know, they really go into that caretaker mode and, you know, take care of other people and maybe not as much themselves, but at the same time, that's how they're surviving that overwhelming period. And that's okay. And other people, it's going into the work. It's that workaholic part that like, I gotta do this. For some part, it's that parent part. You know, I gotta keep showing up for my kids. I gotta keep showing up for my inner kid. Like, I gotta keep fucking going because the bills are coming in and like, I need to go to this appointment. So, but again, just being aware of what the parts are that are showing up so that there can be that choice point around, well, how am I going to take care of myself after this? And that going to the Nine of Wands card. And in that image, it's like, you've got these nine wands. It's kind of like this wood forest scene. And this poor little figure just like holding on to this wand. Like, they've got a bandage across their head. Their shoulders are kind of scrunched up. They're kind of looking off. They're fucking tired. They've been through a battle, you know, like they've been through it. They're still in it, but they're taking a rest at the wand. They're taking a moment for themselves to gather their resources. Maybe they're orienting to the leaves on these wands around them and breathing in, oh, the medicine of the leaves or the air or whatever. So finding, I feel like, back to the dolphin energy, finding those moments of joy, of pleasure, of resource, of, yeah, let's fucking party and celebrate life, even with death, because it's all really just the same. You know, again, that wheel, like, it is all the same. Endings are beginnings, our endings are beginnings. Like, it's actually just all of the same. So how can the healing really be, especially from these binaries, which is all of these bigger systems we've been talking about. It's really, how can we just be in the mess of it together? How can we be in the nuance and complexity? How can we hold the light and the shadow at the same time and build our tolerance and capacity for those kinds of conversations and experiences and be in them together? That's like, I mean, obviously that's also a big fucking task because it's so different.
It's so different.
What we've been taught, but
yeah, I have a beautiful friend who is just a beautiful soul. And yesterday we ran into each other at in this little like art park and ended up having like an hour and a half beautiful conversation. And we were talking about all just everything, you know, life. But one of the things that I appreciate about this human is that she's able to be with dense, heavy things, like dense, deep, deep. She's lived through so much in her 80s and has lived through like so, you guys can't see me. My arms are going up and down like roller coaster
lots
vibes.
Lots of waves,
lived through like some crazy things and like written memoirs about some of the crazy things. And one of the things that I appreciate so much about her is I think because of this up and down in their lives, like she can be in the thick of talking about something that's heavy and dense. And like in the very next sentence, be like, isn't the bark on that tree absolutely beautiful? And she's not bypassing anything or trying to avoid the uncomfortable sensation of the heaviness, but she's genuinely seeing it all at the same time. And that to me is something, I have all the goosebumps. I'm like, that is such a beautiful way to live and a beautiful lens to see the world through, is to see, you know, the light and the shadow, just like you were saying, at the same time, hold it all at the same time and not let one crowd out the other. It's a skill.
Oh my God. It's so beautiful. Like, yeah, really beautiful. And I get this strong, like elder energy, like from that story. And it makes me think of like a major offering I've received from my ancestors and what I feel like for everyone has to, you know, gain from their ancestors as well, wherever they come from, is like this ability to notice the magic still. Yeah. 'Cause we still live in an unfucking believably magical world. Like, yeah. I live Alameda, Chochenyo Ohlone land, right by the, like I'm a block from the beach. And just one of my favorite resourcing practices, because that's kind of what we're talking about, is we have to resource ourselves. We have to put deposits into our wellness bank because there are constant withdrawals. And if you go into that negative and then you go into debt, like it can be really hard to get out of debt sometimes. So you got to get those little deposits throughout the day. And that's what resourcing is. And it's really so healing for our brains, because especially based on trauma cocktail, our brains are not oriented that way. They're oriented to that more hypervigilance, like what's wrong? Where's the danger? Something, the shoe's going to drop, like this can't last forever. And so building that capacity and that practice of being able to, like right now I'm looking out my window, I see my butterfly bush. Oh, I just like, it's just nice right now to feel its presence. Yeah. Oh, that was like at least a $2 deposit in my wellness bank. Those things matter. Yeah. And I think coming from like an activist perspective, sometimes there can be this feeling, often I've noticed for myself, it is that fight part. They're like, oh, I have to always have to keep fighting, keep going. And you have to go and like, duh, 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 duh. And I was like, bro, we also need to rest. Adrienne Marie Brown, that's what pleasure activism is all about. That we, Audre Lorde, you have to fucking be in pleasure, be in creativity, be with the magic of the world so that we can resource ourselves and bring the energy again and the stories and the wherewithal and the vulnerability. It takes a lot of fucking energy to be vulnerable and put yourself out in the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
From a sovereign place, sovereign vulnerability. That's not like vulnerability with this like agenda, you know what I mean?
Performative.
What was that?
like more performative.
Performative. Yes. Thank you. Exactly. Performative vulnerability, like genuine vulnerability is, I mean, I'm thinking of like Brené Brown, that's one of the most courageous things, that you can't have one without the other. And it takes energy to be courageous. It takes chutzpah.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, this was such a beautiful conversation. This feels like a like poetic, gorgeous place to bring closure to the conversation. So where can everyone find you if they've been like, oh, if part of what you've been sharing has just been touching their soul very deeply, where can they find you?
You can find me at fullandplentyjoy.com. Yeah, I share stories like on a weekly basis. Solasta shares it all. So that's a nice place to engage. I'm kind of like an old school millennial in that way. I'm like, let's get back to like sending each other notes and emails and things. But you can also find me on Instagram at Solasta McIntyre Etheridge. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I think that you're like at the, I feel like you're with the going back to email and kind of, you know, tapped into a pulse that so many share, you know, mm-hmm. I think that that's the thing, especially the more, convoluted social media becomes, you know, I think that the more, we're as creators and as consumers all just kind of like,
boundaries, like actually you don't share everything on social media, and there's like, and you know, that's why it's nice to be have spaces like, you know, conversations like on this podcast. Thank you so much for having me, and you know, getting to notes with each other, because it's you can be more vulnerable in that way, like because you also don't want to be vulnerable in spaces or with people who have shown you that actually this is not the place to be vulnerable. So important to build those spaces with each other.
Yeah. 1,000,000%. 1,000,000%. There's a conversation that's actually going to drop later this week on the podcast. That was a part of the conversation. We were talking about like the divergent values between the social media platform and those who are using the platform, who maybe want to have conversations of depth and connection and relationship building and like genuine, you know, human to human connection. Meanwhile, the platform has a completely different set of values and preferences about what, you know, gets shared and shown on the platform. So yeah, I agree with that very deeply, is being able to create those spaces that, number one, you know, are safe for that type of sharing, and number two, share the values, you know, or like everyone knows that they're chosen to be there for a reason, you know, and like with intention, that's not maybe necessarily just scrolling for the next viral thing.
Yes.
Yeah, it's huge.
Well, so if I want to go viral ever, it's just never. Like sounds like a lot.
Never. I accidentally went semi-viral one time with like a reel that was a joke. He's bringing humor to the patriarchy, and oh, that was enough for me. Going semi-viral. Yeah,
I bet.
I was like, because you know, humor. Anytime we put words to anything, we inherently begin to cut out other perspectives and possibilities. That's just the nature of like putting words to experience. Like, silence is the only thing that has room for it all, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful.
It's so true, right?
Yes.
And yeah, so I mean, and humor especially is like making light of a thing. Like we were talking about at the very beginning, to kind of like help digest it. And yes. Oof, man. I was like, yeah, I don't need to go. Do you hear that, internet gods? I don't need to send goddesses. I don't need to go viral, because the comments just from that one reel alone, I was like, oh goodness. So yeah, I'm right there with you. But this was wonderful. Thank you so much. And I'm so grateful that the universe brought us together.
Me too. I appreciate it so much. Yeah, I love your questions and your energy and what you're bringing into the world. So thank you for doing that.
Literally my pleasure.